Good morning, everyone. Want to welcome you to the Education Finance House Education Finance Committee, gavelling to order. We have a quorum. First part of our business is minutes, as always. So, Representative Purcell, have you had a chance? Okay, Representative Jordan has had a chance. I'm seeing all the hand signals here. Love it. So Representative Jordan, would you like to move the minutes for March 3rd?
So moved, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Jordan. Any questions on the minutes for March 3rd? Give everybody a second to pull them out of their packets. Seeing none, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
All those opposed, no. The minutes for March 3rd are adopted. With that, we have House File 423 first on the agenda today. Welcome, Representative Liz Lagarde, House Education Finance Committee. I will move House File 423 before the committee with the intention of laying it over for the bill for possible inclusion in an education finance bill. With that, would you please proceed?
Well, thank you, Madam Chair and committee members. This is the first time I have ever been in this committee, so I didn't bring treats because I'm on my third term, but it took me a while to get here, but I did get here. So thank you for the opportunity to present House File 423, Supplemental Construction Aid for Rock Ridge, Ely, Maple Canyon Schools. Why do these districts need help? Well, they need help to finish their school construction projects. And why? Bad timing has increased the cost of their projects by millions of dollars. These three projects all started building just before the pandemic hit. The pandemic itself, along with the supply chain issues and inflation, have driven the cost of each project up dramatically. These districts could not adjust the size of the scope of the project as they had the shovels in the ground and construction was underway. This is a one-time state appropriation that would help them finish these projects as promised to the taxpayers that voted for them in their districts, and most importantly, for the students. With me today, I have two testifiers, Madam Chair, and I don't know which one you'd like to begin.
I have Dr. Noel Schmidt and then Ann Olke. So why don't we have Dr. Schmidt, please state your name for the record and proceed.
My name is Dr. Noel Schmidt, Superintendent of Rock Ridge. And thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. I am here today probably to tell you about one of the best education stories in Minnesota that you may not have heard of, Rock Ridge. Two ancient rival districts. You probably read about us in the Minneapolis Star Tribune. They did an article about hockey. They did a movie about about hockey, of course, because that's where we are and that's important. And so two ancient rival districts come together, two completely separate votes. Same day, two completely school districts. They voted yes to build two elementary schools and one high school. And then a year later, they voted to consolidate. Who does this? I was involved in four public votes over the span of 18 months. All four of them passed. What's happening up there is absolutely incredible. They did everything right. They worked together. They cooperated. They're building mutual facilities. Then they agreed to consolidate. First elementary school. Completed on time, on budget. High school, just completed on time, on budget. And that high school, very unique anywhere in the United States, because we're building these things based on career academies, 21st century skills, project-based learning, hands-on, critical thinking. We are doing everything that we are supposed to be doing. Last elementary school. COVID hits. We can't build the building right away because usually what happens is school passes a bond and then you start building in about a year. We couldn't do that. We had 500 kids. We had nowhere to put them. So there was a delay and then bad timing. COVID hit. So bids come in. Final cost, $7,301,715. Over what the taxpayers had voted on in 2019. Who has that kind of money just laying around? And so what we did is we moved all of our demo money into the North Star Elementary. If you're wondering what have we done so far, we moved all of our demo money in. We even included money for demo in the original bond. The voters said yes. We had to cut the outdoor. We have an elementary school right now. They literally have no grass. There's literally no grass. They have no open field to plant because we just simply can't do it. And in case you're wondering, you might have heard we did talk in regards to tax exemption. That's a drop in the bucket. We need you. We need you to help, and all we're asking for is just help the taxpayers out in one of the poorest areas in Minnesota so that the voters up there and the kids and our grandkids, they get what they voted for in 2019 to cooperative work together. All we're asking is just consider us when you're taking a look at your bills. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Schmidt. With that, please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the House of Education Finance Committee. My name is Ann Elke. Some of you might have heard me on the Capitol being referred to as Annie Oakley, because that's what it looks like when it's on print. I'm the elementary principal for the Independent School District of 696 in Ely, Minnesota, which is, if you know, in the Arrowhead at the end of the road, literally. You can't really go much further than Ely unless you want to go to the Boundary Waters. I'm proud to say that I'm an Ely graduate of the Ely Memorial High School. I returned after college. I taught in Ely, and then I became the elementary principal there. Thank you, Representative Liz Legard, for bringing forward this bill, House File 423. In 2020, the citizens of Ely began the process to modernize the Ely School campus by connecting our two 100-year-old buildings, our 100-year-old elementary and 100-year-old high school. With a new building that would include a 21st century learning space for science, technology, and engineering, a new gymnasium, a new library and media center, a new food service area, and additional energy efficiency and technology upgrades to the two existing buildings, and a new safe and secure main entrance for the 100-year-old campus. The entire project was to cost a bit more than $20 million. With $10 million coming from the taxpayers of Ely, and then $7 million from taconite taxes as part of the Department of Iron Range Resources School Collaboration Program. The use of our LTFM funding combined with a modest federal grant made up the rest for the project. As in the case for so many projects, pandemic-related supply chain issues and increases in the cost of building materials have caused a project to unexpectedly increase by over $6 million. The bill proposed by Representative Liz Legard will help us finish the project. I know you have many schools asking for funds to help for projects, and you may ask, well, why are Ely and Rockridge different than some of the other schools? Our projects literally started just before the pandemic. We did not have the ability to stop or adjust the project, and the supply chain and inflation increases hit us in real time, leaving us unable to adjust or change our projects. If we were just going out to bid now on our project, we could adjust and size the project appropriately. But due to that timing of our project, we could not do that. Now we are trying to finish the project that our taxpayers of Ely approved. I want to assure members of the committee that our project contains nothing frivolous. We're talking about technology and energy upgrades to our 100-year-old buildings to serve students for years to come. We're talking about safety upgrades that will keep our students and teachers safe. We're talking about new modern learning spaces so that we can train students with the skills that they'll need to either enter the workforce upon graduation or go on further education. Without this additional assistance by the state, we will be unable to finish the important safety and technology upgrades to our two 100-year-old buildings. We have finished the new connecting facility, which is wonderful, but now we need the additional support to finish the project again for our two 100-year-old buildings. Madam Chair and members of the committee, thank you for consideration for your support of public schools like ours in Ely at the end of the road. If any of you are in Ely, please come and check out our new facilities. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you so much. I checked out your facilities before you started, so I'll have to go back and see how you made that connection. For those of you who don't know, there are three separate buildings with the outside with no connector between, and their elementary kids in the middle of winter go out to the high school for lunch for where the cafeteria is. So that connector was important. With that, members, do we have any questions or testimony at the table? Questions or comments, sorry. Seeing none, Representative Lislicard, final
gosh,
comments.
Gosh, I make it easy. No, thank you so much, and I would truly appreciate any consideration when you're putting together your bill, Madam Chair. Thank you, members.
Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Lislicard. With that, I'll lay over House File 423 for possible inclusion in an education finance bill. That, I would like now, I'd like to move our hand the gavel over to Vice Chair Clardy.
So our next agenda item is House File 620. Chair Youakim, would you like to move House File 620 before the committee with intention to lay over for the bill for possible inclusion in the Ed Finance Bill?
Yes, I would. That would be my motion.
Great. You may present.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members, for hearing House File 620 today. It is also encompassed in the bill that you're going to hear next. But I think they let me carry it by myself because I've been working on it for about 3 years now. So as an education support professional, this bill is near and dear to my heart. It requires education support professionals, also known as ESPs, to be given 16 hours of paid professional development or training per year. The bill proposes an appropriation to pay for this. As this bill is to pay for this, and right now we're working on a formula to figure out how that's going to go out to schools. We've had that type of formula in the past in our education finance bills. And as always, the opportune word is scalable. This bill also includes requirements that those who work with individual students with disabilities must be given time to review a student's IEP and or time to collaborate with the student's teacher regarding the plan before they work with that student. This communication between teacher and paraprofessional who are working with students is so very important. It's especially important for paras who work with their students with special needs. The training and communication help prepare to know how best to work with the student, what triggers the students might have, what works to calm them down, and what vulnerabilities they may have. Some of these training requirements are already happening in our schools, but this bill would not only make sure that that training is happening, it would also provide the funding for the school to provide the training. In weeks since the session has started, we've heard, I should say months now, we have heard how many more needs our students have, especially around mental health. That makes this training in the presence of qualified support staff in our classrooms even more important in meeting the needs of our students. This last interim, I once again worked in our schools as a substitute paraprofessional. In previous years, I've worked as a full-time para during the interim in the fall into the winter with kindergartners with special needs in a level three EVD and DCD program at Aquila Elementary in St. Louis Park. I've also worked as a paraprofessional in early childhood and at the high school level. Over the years, I've seen how effective professional training can be. I've also seen what happens when training's not available. I've started after the school year has begun at times and experienced having to do the training on my own time. That happened to me when I first started at Aquila Elementary a few years back. Even though I had started at the beginning of the school year at Aquila, it was after some training time had been provided. So I had 5+ hours of online modules dealing with health and safety that had to be viewed on my own time. I was happy to do it, but our educational support professionals deserve to get paid for the time when they are training to do their jobs. Finding those funds can be even harder than finding the time. With that, this appropriation, the bill would provide our schools with some relief. St. Louis Park is not alone in trying to find money for training. Many districts are forced to pick and choose what they can afford versus training their paras as a fully functioning team that could do so much more to serve our students. While this is my story, I know it's not a unique one. You will now hear from an educational support professional with firsthand experience and who are doing incredible work in our schools every day. I believe I have Bill Shanti here. He's the program management aide for Poplar Bridge Elementary School in Bloomington Public Schools. And welcome back.
Wonderful. Could you please state your name for the record?
Hi, I'm Bill Schwant. I am a paraprofessional in Bloomington, as Chair Joachim told you, as well as I am a president of our local Federation of Paraprofessionals. As a special ed paraprofessional in a multi-categorical program, I work with students with a wide variety of needs. There are students on the autism spectrum, students with specific learning disabilities, and emotional behavioral disorders. I spend all of my time in the general education setting, which means that I typically see these students more in one day than their special education teacher sees them in an entire week. I'm here to speak about the need for funding for paraprofessionals across the state. Currently, there is a statute that leaves the professional development up to the school boards, and it's just not happening. In many cases, paraprofessionals are receiving minimal, if any, professional development. Yearly in my district, we are privileged to receive a six-hour day of professional development at the beginning of the school year. And during the day, we're treated to such scintillating topics as mandated reporting, maltreatment of minors, data privacy, and bloodborne pathogens, which are all very important topics in their own right, but none of those address the topics that allow paraprofessionals to further develop the knowledge and skills specific to the students with whom they'll be working. During the past 3 years, I've received 0 hours of professional development on autism, 0 hours on specific learning disabilities, and 0 on emotional behavioral disorders. In talking with paraprofessional leaders across the state, this is not exclusive to Bloomington. Paraprofessionals come from many walks of life. Many have little or no experience in working with students receiving special education services prior to starting, and their own reference to what happens in school is their own personal experience or the experience they have with their own children. I can say education looks very different from when I was a public school student in St. Paul. For new paraprofessionals who are hired prior to the start of the school year, they are at least afforded an opportunity to learn a little about students and they will be working with. But those who start once the school year starts are typically cast into the fire, working with students with little to no training, without professional development upon employment and annual opportunities. These essential employees may never develop the skills and understanding necessary to make a positive impact on a student's education and ultimately their lives. Paraprofessionals have always been essential, and that has been magnified with the onset of COVID. And that's even more so for the students that receive special education services. Investment in professional development for paraprofessionals is not only an investment in paraprofessionals, it's an investment in students. I'll close with this thought. Now is the time. Now is the time to invest in schools and students. Now is the time to assure that every adult working with students receives the professional development they need. And now is the time because the state has the resources to make this happen. Thank you.
Madam Chair, I'd like to do something a little unconventional. I'd like to also now testify as a paraprofessional. I put some of the comments in my opening, but I wanted to kind of fill out a bigger picture for folks. Is that okay?
Yes, go ahead.
Thank you. So my first job as a paraprofessional was at the high school level, lunchroom, cafeteria, hallway. And I was lucky enough that the district had some money to do nonviolence crisis prevention intervention training. It was supposed to be a 12-hour module. They could only afford 8, but I felt very lucky to get that to begin with. And it's an evidence-based approach on how to de-escalate when things get high with students. And there's a lot of emotion going on and how to work with students and use verbal cues. It's a very, very good training. It probably could be used here, actually, as well. But no, I was lucky to do that. But when I'm 2 years, every 2 years, you're supposed to have a refresher. And when I moved into the next building, they didn't have the money to do the refresher course. I still kept the workbook. I still go over it. But if you're not practicing those skills every few years with folks that are trainers, it's really hard to keep them fresh. I've also worked with vulnerable students where I've been thrown in as a sub, and students that have feeding tubes, students who are nonverbal and use a machine to talk, or a computer, or a laptop, iPad to talk, and not knowing how to function that and feeling like, you know, I'm not doing my best to communicate with them. I've had to help when I was in early childhood, kids with toileting that also are in feeding tubes. So there's a lot of vulnerable students we work with, and this bill would really just ask for some time, one, to work with the teacher to find out what those needs are, what those triggers are, so they can have an optimal school day. It's not their fault their current para isn't there to help them. And also to give those paras the very best start in the beginning of the school year to know how to work with all the students that they're working with to get the proper training. I've been in schools where districts, you know, scrape whatever money they can together to do this, and I have to give kudos to St. Louis Park for doing that and incorporating the paras as a team. They gave us prep time to actually put down very specific details about our students that we work with, that worked with every day, so that if there was a sub, that person would at least have some notes. So there's ways to do this, and this bill would just help provide a little bit of funding so school districts that I know want to do this. This is no hit on school districts. They do want to do this, but help have some funding to help them do this because it's really important. We're working with kids that have a plethora of needs that need to be met in a situation that isn't always optimal for them either, and we're just asking for a little bit of help. So thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It is really important. We have no testifiers from the public that have signed up for File 620. Are there any questions from the committee? Representative Kreisha.
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Chair Joaquin, for the bill. For the test for just as I was thinking through this, and I was reading through the bill, is there an opportunity? Can some of this training be done virtually? Can it be done during the e-learning days, like if they have a snow day in their home anyway? Are there options, or does this have to be directed and in person?
Yeah, there are options that our district does afford us on some of those e-learning days, which is a great opportunity. We have a system called Infinitech. But there's something else to be said between sitting at home, watching a module online, and having nobody there to answer questions when they arise, compared to being in a group with people that do similar jobs, to be with teachers, where you can take information learned in a workshop and go right back and discuss that with your teacher and have those types of great conversations on how to apply that information that you just learned. To apply those skills that you just learned and put them into action to benefit the kids that you work with.
And Madam Chair, I'd also like to add, too, there's something about the collaboration when you're working. As a para, you don't always work all day with the same student and you're handing them off to somebody else. And just that time to collaborate and find out, okay, what's going on today, or how's this working for you? What have you tried? It's a lot similar to the discussions we had around the Bar Center programming, where you're having different paras together. And that's, like I said, that was one of the best kind of professional development training experience I had when St. Louis Park allowed us to do that as a team.
Great. Lead Kreisha, do you have a follow-up?
Yep, just a quick follow-up. So thank you for that. And all I'm looking for is, I mean, nothing in the bill prohibits. So, like, you could have a Senate, because I agree with you that collaboration in person, the benefits of that. But you could have a snow day where rather than looking for something to do for somebody, you could give them the opportunity to catch up on training. So your bill doesn't prohibit that.
Representative Kreisha, no, it doesn't.
Okay.
What I would encourage, though, is that the faster you can get the training in the BA in this school year, you know, I know it snows sometimes early in Minnesota, but waiting until November or December to get some of this training would really be a disservice to kids.
Thank you, Chair Joaquin. Thank you, Lead Kreisha. Representative Senator Mara?
Thank you. Thank you, Madam Chair, for bringing this bill. You've spoken a lot about the kind of paid orientation or paid training. Can you speak a little bit to the need for time for paraprofessionals to review students' individualized education programs? Kind of when would a para find time to do that now? And like, what would the difference be if we were giving kind of paid time within a para's day or outside of the day for them to do that important
work? Chair Yukim?
Thank you, Representative Senator Mara. Thank you for asking that question, because there is usually not any time. And that is one of the major concerns and one of the reasons why I also wanted to carry this bill. And it's not just reviewing the IEP to make sure you understand what the educational goals are. It's also reviewing the IEP so you can make sure what other needs and triggers a student may have. And if you, you know, I think I have been given a folder of IEPs during my lunch hour to look over, and that's about it, unless you're right there in the beginning. And part of this, too, is our districts, they don't always know what students are going to walk in their door right away, and you could be 2 weeks, a month, 2 months into school and get a brand new student. So this is kind of ongoing training that needs to happen as well, and ongoing access to understanding the student's academic need.
Thank you, Chair Yukim. Since Mira,
just to follow up on that, thank you for putting this in the bill. You know, I think I know that we've also talked about kind of the number of hours that special education teachers put into writing the IEPs. But, you know, I have seen that those IEPs are only as good as the people implementing them, knowing them. And we know that paraprofessionals often spend more time with our students than anyone else. And so I have seen paraprofessionals that want to do the right thing, but say, like, I don't even know what's in that document. I haven't gotten a chance to review it. And so I think also to just give honor to the special education teachers that put so much time into writing those IEPs, we need to make sure that everyone that is working with a student knows what's in that. So thank you.
Thank you.
And Chair Yukim, do you have any final words regarding your bill?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. ESPs really are the folks in our schools who provide the most direct services to students with disabilities, as well as support the entire student population. We trust ESPs with very important caretaking tasks. They need professional development to be successful with their students and in their careers, and we owe them at least the chance to receive that training. Training that will be helpful for them to grow in their job, feel fulfilled, and definitely help with retention. You've heard testimonies about how important and effective this training is, and I sit before you with personal experience of how valuable that training can be. As this bill continues to move forward, as we lay it over, I will continue to work with their school districts as well. I know they had some concerns around the language, and we're working on that. And I want to thank members for your comments and questions and ask for your support of the bill.
And with that, the chair lays over House File 620 for possible inclusion in the Education Finance Bill. And I'll hand the gavel back to Chair Yukim.
Representative Tapke, welcome to the committee. Should have just had you sit down as I was leaving. Sorry, I'm a little slower this morning. Representative Pryor, would you like to move House File 1348 before the committee today with the intention of laying it over for possible inclusion in the Education Finance Bill?
So moved, Madam Chair.
With that, Representative Tapke, I believe you have an A5 amendment. Would you like to describe the amendment, please?
Thank you, Madam Chair. So, yes, we have an A5 amendment that is the result of work that we were doing before and since the Education Policy Committee hearing that we had. This does a couple things. It adds some clarifications, so it adds clarifying language to make sure that this bill is referring to strictly to folks that have student contact in the classrooms, and so it adds student contact. So if someone is a bus driver but also does for the same company trucking, that the trucking piece is not included in this bill, that it is the student contact pieces that are the important. We add a formula into this bill, which I'm sure we'll talk about further as we go forward. And then lastly, it also clarifies the minimum wage pieces of things. So that's where we are at with this amendment, and I'd appreciate support.
Thank you, Representative Tapke. Members, does anybody have any questions on the amendment? With that, members, I would renew Representative Pryor's motion to put the A5 amendment in the bill. All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Those opposed, no. The A5 amendment's adopted. Representative Tapke, go ahead.
Thank you so much, Chair Yukim. So we had a really great discussion in the Ed Policy Committee about this bill. And so what this does is it adds a, for folks that are in paras, janitors, food service workers, bus drivers, folks that are non-licensed people in the schools. It gives a minimum wage. This bill has it set at $25 an hour. It has health care. It has paid time for working with students to make sure that everyone has an understanding as to what the professional development sides need to be. It has paid time to prep and also has e-learning days as paid. So right now we've had many e-learning days from a lot of schools throughout this school year, and our hourly workers are not paid for that. And so this is a professional job that deserves to be treated that way. And so we will, that's what this bill does, is for education folks. And so at last hearing as well, there's a lot of discussion around trust, and there's a lot of discussion around the financing of things like this, and I very much understand the concern around that. And so I just wanted to take a moment to explain further what the intent and what we hope to accomplish with this bill is. Is it for decades in Minnesota, we have not been funding education at the levels that we feel should be funding education in the state of Minnesota. And so that has set up an unfortunate and hopefully into the future unnecessary butting of heads between teachers and between hourly workers that aren't included in that in those categories. And so there has been a scarcity that just doesn't allow those other folks to get paid what they should be in order to have it as a professional job that we all want it to be, supporting families and moving forward that way. And so with this today, we have 72 openings for paras at the Osteo School District, 14 school nutrition folks that are open positions, $16.63 an hour is what they get paid. And so you can go somewhere else and get paid $16.63 an hour really easily. And that doesn't support our kids and doesn't support our schools. Prior Lake Savage has 10 nutrition positions that are open. St. Peter has 30 bus drivers that are open there as well. And so hopefully this bill is going to be taken in the intent as to what it is meant to do, as well as the piece that I left out on the amendment is that there was a levy line item in the bill as well, that we have removed that levy line item also. So that was met with resistance, and it's not necessary to the bill, so we pulled that out. So I there are some testifiers, Chair, when you are ready.
Thank you, Representative Tapke. With that, we have Dave Camper. He's the first testifier on remote, and I believe he has a slideshow for us real quickly as well. Mr. Camper, please state your name for the record and proceed.
Chair Joachim, committee members, thank you. My name is Dave Camper. I am a senior state policy coordinator for the Economic Policy Institute in D.C. I've addressed this committee once before, and I appreciate the chance to do so again. I have a slideshow I'm not going to do every slide of because I want to stick to the 2 minutes, and you have copies of the slides. So I will try to move quickly through this and hit what I think is the critical series of points that we want to make about the labor market for education support professionals. First, I will start with this slide here, which shows that the height of K-12 education employment in this country was 2008. Even before the pandemic started, the country had not caught back up to pre-Great Recession levels of education employees, even though, as the dark blue line indicates, if we kept education employment up with student enrollment, we'd be 658,000 above where we were when this graph was made. Now, this is slightly out of date in some of those numbers, but the point is K-12 public employment has collapsed in this country, and it's particularly challenging here in Minnesota. If you look at this chart here, which I tried to make as simple as I could, Minnesota's got a great labor market right now. Our unemployment rate is very low. We're frequently the lowest in the country on a month-to-month basis. We also have a very high labor force participation rate, which means how many people who are of working age are in the labor force as opposed to people who choose not to enter the labor force. It is not the case in Minnesota that no one wants to work. Lots of people want to work, more than the national average, and they are working. Those who want to work are finding jobs at near record levels in the country. That's why the third row in this chart is so significant. We have people who want jobs are finding them. They are not going to K-12 jobs. We are 6.4% down from before the pandemic compared to just 2.4% nationally. So while Minnesota's overall job picture is much better than the rest of the country, we are not finding people to fill K-12 education jobs. And I think this next slide, which I'm going to skip ahead to, demonstrates why. The weekly wages of education support professionals are far below the typical worker in this country. They are far below. That's both because their hourly wages are lower and that many of them do not work a 40-hour week. And so basic economics says when employment conditions are good, people leave a lower-paying job for a higher-paying job. And those are other reasons why people stay in the job. But the pay and compensation makes a significant difference. And this is the situation we face in Minnesota right now, where people who are able to find, who want to can move to higher paying jobs. One of the biggest changes is in bus drivers, because the credential to be a bus driver allows you to take a lot of other jobs. If we do not fundamentally change the way education support professionals are compensated in Minnesota, we will never get the numbers that we need. We will never get them. And that will create problems in the long run. And that's what I wanted to talk about. And I'll let you look at the rest of your rest of the slides at your leisure. I appreciate the committee's time. Thank you so very much.
Thank you, Mr. Camper. Up next, we have Anna Gibson, also remote. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Good morning. My name is Annie Gibson, and I thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. My name is Annie Gibson. I am a member of the Teamsters Local 320, and I work for South Washington County School District as a high needs ABC paraprofessional, and I'm here to testify in solid support of House File 1348. As an eight-year employee, I have worked with early childhood 2 to 5 year olds, and I currently work with K through 5 age children in an ABC classroom. I am also a single mother of 2 kids, and you can't imagine how much this passing of this bill would positively impact my family's life. I struggle to make ends meet, and having health issues myself, with having school districts pay 100% of my individual premiums, or for those that need family coverage, the 85% coverage. That's a huge benefit for me. It would put extra money into my pocket to better house, clothe, and feed my own children. This bill will provide an opportunity for paraprofessionals to have paid training in a couple of different ways. First, with a new student being placed, a paraprofessional should be given paid time to review the child's IEP and time to collaborate with the teacher on what each child's goals are. Prior to the school year starting, there should be 16 hours paid training time for all paraprofessionals relating to their specific job, of which 8 hours should be time spent with their classroom teacher to prep for their students. Finally, I want to touch on the shortage that we have in this job. In order to retain people, good people, there needs to be livable wages and better working benefits. I absolutely love my job, not only for the people that I work with, but my kids. Every day I work to make a difference in their lives. These children depend on us every day. They look for us every day. They need us every day. A couple of weeks ago, I was actually out sick for 3 days. And when I returned, every one of my kids came up to me and hugged me and tell me how much they missed me. Now, keep in mind, some of my kids in my special ed classroom are not usually the type that hug other people. So it was kind of a big deal, and it made me a little bit emotional. Our children with IEPs are so much more successful when they have consistency in staffing. I love my kids, and I look forward to seeing them every day. I take pride in my relationship with each child, and I love being a part of the child's growth in education and social emotional well-being. We need to make this profession people out and stay for a very long time. This legislation would be a great start. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Ms. Gibson. And yes, that consistency is so very important, especially in the line of paraprofessional, having subs come in constantly because you're still having open positions. I had to chuckle. I forgot to block off my time this month for subbing. And just watching the numbers, every 30 minutes I'm getting a call or there's an opening. And when I go and look on Teachers on Call, they're not just, oh, you're subbing for this person or you're subbing for that person. It says open position. And that open position means there's somebody different with those kids every single day. And consistency is a premium when we're working with some of our kids. So I just had to take a little editorial time there. Sorry. Next up, we have Sarah Rapp and then Carolyn Long on deck. Go ahead and state your name for the record.
Good morning, Chair and members of the committee. My name is Sarah Rapp. I have been a cook at the Hastings High School for 4 years. I'm a proud member of the SEIU Local 284. I am part of the Hastings Food Service workers who, as of today, have been on strike for 1 month for our push for a fair contract for the workers who feed our students. Unfortunately, our district won't come to the bargaining table to reach a fair deal with us, which means students are eating cold lunches and we are missing seeing the kids that we care about so much. For example, this past weekend, I work at the high school and the boys took home the wrestling state champs and we weren't there. And it's kind of a bummer. This bill, the ESP Bill of Rights, would make it much less likely the staff like me would have to strike for basic things like higher wages and getting paid on e-learning days. One of the big reasons I am on strike is that our wages are way too low. I've worked there 4 years. I make $15.05 an hour and don't get close to 40 hours per week. It's hard to get by on these wages as a single mom. $25 per hour would be a gigantic change for so many people. It would mean we could take care of ourselves and our families with the same care and compassion we take care of our students. And it isn't just that. If we don't see changes, even more people will leave this work. We consistently have had multiple openings during my entire employment. At one point, we had 3 people doing the job of 8 people. The ESP Bill of Rights would cover a lot of important issues, but another big one for our group is making sure hourly workers get paid on e-learning days. Right now, we don't get paid on e-learning days, and unlike snow days, these do not get made up at the end of the year. That means hourly workers like us, who already are paid at the least in the school, have to take another financial hit because of something we have no control over. Passing the ESP Bill of Rights, raising wages, and making sure our jobs are treated with respect we deserve would allow me and my son some wiggle room. It would mean my job is treated with the respect it deserves. Our strike shows that we are facing a crisis. It isn't just us. It's school workers across the state. Please pass this bill. Our strike shows the crisis facing school workers because of the low wages and disrespect we are facing. We need to fix this before the staffing crisis gets worse, so we can focus on what we do best, caring for our students. Thank you for your time.
Thank you so much. Carolyn Long, please. Settle and state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair and committee. My name is Caroline Long. I am a special education teacher with Minneapolis Public Schools, a school board member with the Robbinsdale School District, and a parent of a student who receives special education assistance supports. I'm here to testify about the Educational Support ESP Bill of Rights, House File 1348, and the critical role that ESPs have in the development, implementation, and support of our students who receive special education services. As a special education teacher, ESPs have played the role of supporting, implementing behavior plans and goals, and collecting data on students on my caseload. But more importantly, they've played the role of connecting students who receive their support to their well-being, education, and a sense of belonging to the larger community in the school. ESPs are the ones who support students through their struggles with academics, study skills, and social-emotional skills. ESPs are there for students' struggles and students' small successes. Without ESPs, students I work with would miss out on having a school experience that is similar to their non-disabled peers and learning lifelong skills that help them to be independent. As a parent, I have witnessed the confidence and comfort ESPs have provided to my child to persist in a task and stay in a class. I can note the successful years my child had in school on a consistent ESP. Like the students I teach, my child struggled with school when they could not keep a consistent ESP due to wages that the ESPs were being paid. As a school board member, I see how funds are directed in ways that do not impact student growth and development. Because trained employees is expensive and therefore the support from the state through this dedicated funding will help district control cost better. ESPs add so much to students, the teachers, and the educational system, but ESPs are not given the training, support, pay, or respect to want to continue with the job. With the increasing cost of healthcare and other living expenses and the low wages they receive, it becomes a struggle for them to do the job that they love and provide for their family. I am asking that you support the ESP Bill of Rights, House File 1348. Having their wages start at ESPs should have their wages start at $25 an hour, which would ensure that they could work one job because one job should be enough. Like every other employee in the school building, they should also be paid during e-learning days. They should have access to affordable health care. Due to the low wages some of these employees make, they walk away with nothing in their paycheck due to their low pay and the high cost of health care. These investments in ESPs will help keep the same caring ESPs in my classroom and in our schools year in and year out. This is a retention issue. Again, I appreciate your support for the ESP Bill of Rights, House File 1314, for our children and their best outcomes.
Thank you so much, board member and teacher. Next up, we've got some folks from the public signed up to testify. I have Marianne Thompson and Tim Caskey. Why don't you come up at the same time, and then we'll save the transit time. Go ahead, Marianne Thomas. State your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I am Marianne Thomas. I serve as the Director of Human Resources with the Farmington Area School District, and I've been in public education HR for 29 years. I'm here to testify today on behalf of school boards and superintendents on one concern regarding one aspect of House File 1348. The proposed legislation in its current form requires full pay and benefits for weather-related e-learning days this school year. Most school districts, and I've worked in three, but I have, as a president of the school personnel associations, I talk with many of my colleagues in schools. Most school districts have negotiated some form of compensation for the employees, ranging from working from home on such e-learning days, performing normal responsibilities, engaging in valuable professional development, making up the time doing other meaningful work on non-school days before or after school, or even after the school year concludes. Some of our employees in Farmington have chosen to make up those hours, but most have chosen not to. Many of our staff work in community education programs, and parents have already been reimbursed for these e-learning days when their children were not able to attend daycare, participate in activities and such. Yet this bill would propose that the employees there who chose not to work still get paid, even though no revenue is coming in for those days. The cost of this legislation in Farmington this year alone is $280,000. We are proposing $3 million in reduction for 23-24 school year, despite the governor's proposal on funding. That's 3.5 teachers we won't be able to save, 3.5 counselors, teachers, mental health support workers. We believe that this bill should at least be modified to allow the payment of hours for e-learning days based on performing meaningful work on the day or making up that meaningful work, or at a minimum, or at a minimum, to exclude employees in the community ed program who are in parent-paid programs. I thank you for listening to me today and considering my thoughts on this one aspect of House File 1348.
Thank you. Next up, we have Tim Caskey. Please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is Tim Caskey. I am the Executive Director of Human Resources with ISD 728, which is the 8th largest school district in the state. I'm here to talk about the specifics of the $25 an hour minimum wage that is addressed in the bill. I first want to start by saying we believe in a competitive wage, but we believe that that competitive wage should be a product of the market as well as the collective bargaining process. When we look at this bill and we look at the minimum wage, we project that the increase to our district will be $3.4 million. And that increase will be affected in three primary areas. It is part of our community education, which would increase by $1.1 million, primarily in our childcare areas. What that means is, because this is a fee-based program, we will have to raise the fees for parents so we can provide childcare. That estimated raise in fees would make us the highest childcare provider in our area and essentially take us out of that market. The second is in our food service area, which we project would be a $452,000 increase. Although the state is proposing to pay for meals, that does not include the a la carte part of what is provided to students. Those items would have to also be increased. And then there is the general fund, which is a $1.7 million increase. That increase would have to come from other parts of the district. So to put this in perspective, the $1.1 million in community ed is the equivalent of 25 child care workers. The $1.7 million in our general fund is the equivalent of 17 social workers, counselors, intervention specialists that we could have in the classroom. And finally, there are costs not accounted for in the bill. If the wage is a minimum of $25, then we will have to adjust our longevity steps. Our contracts are currently structured to provide longevity increases for a number of years. Those would have to increase also, which is not projected as part of it. Thank you for taking this into consideration and for your time.
Thank you so much. Next up, we have Mary Burrows. And then on deck, I believe we have Scott McMullen. So if you could come up too. Sorry, McMahon. Go ahead, state your name for the record and proceed.
My name is Mary Burrows. I'm the Executive Director of Human Resources for Bloomington Public Schools, and I've been in public education for about 13 years. I'm here on behalf of Minnesota's school boards and superintendents, and first want to thank you for the time-consuming work that you are doing and for listening to our concerns. I am before you today to speak about the proposed insurance premium proposal in the bill and increase. I believe there are ways to support employees and their families, and we want to do that. But without significant, substantial, ongoing financial support, this will be an overwhelming cost to districts as they absorb the proposed increase, as well as higher than usual insurance renewals that are occurring currently because of COVID the past 2 years. Additionally, more employees may join our plan as public plans become more attractive than private industry plans, adding to district costs. In Bloomington, at a minimum, this item would cause an increase of around $4 to $6 million the next 2 years if plan renewal costs didn't increase and our membership in the plan remained the same. Impact to classroom and programming will occur in the 24-25 school year since our staffing and programming budget for 23-24 has been established. This means very steep cuts the following school year, such as cuts to tenured and probationary teachers, support staff, mental health support for students, change of teaming school models, and less classroom support for EL learners and student activities. If districts are no longer allowed to levy for the cost, then we need 100% state aid. Without permanent funding increases, either in support of this bill or other educational costs, such as an increase to formula, this additional cost, both monetary and decrease of staff, will be extremely difficult to implement. And I thank you for your time to listen.
Thank you so much. Next up, Scott McMahon. Go ahead, state your name for the record so I could pronounce it right finally, and proceed.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, thank you for this opportunity. Scott McMahon with Flaherty & Hood here today on behalf of our client, the Minnesota School Bus Operators Association. We are the contractors who contract for about 60% of the bus routes across the state. I do want to thank Representative Habke for the amendment he brought forward today. The bill is in a better shape than it was an hour ago. It's still not perfect, but it's moving in the right direction. A few things that we want to comment for the record with this language at this point. First is with regards to the $25 an hour minimum wage for contractors and the language around employees who are performing the services under this contract. We have situations where we have businesses that are providing school transportation, they're providing motor coach transportation, they're providing trucking transportation, and some of these employees intersect those business areas. And so we're hoping we can get clarification as to, you know, to what level do those people need to be designated on those contracts. You know, if it's 20% on the bus side but 80% on the trucking side, you know, is that who we're looking at impacting from this standpoint? We also want to be in the record to just identify the fact that this can present cost pressures within contracts. As you know, school districts have limited funds to invest in their various levels of operation. One of the concerns we have is that if we have to allocate more money onto the wage side of the contract, that those funds will come out of funds that we're trying to make available for investments in new school buses, safety initiatives like that. So we just want to raise that one. We do also have concern just about the way that the bill is worded, that it seems to put the onus on the contractors to pay the employees this level, but doesn't necessarily put the onus on the school districts to acknowledge the total costs that need to come into play here. With regards to lines 1.10, 1.11 on the amendment, I've talked with a number of our operators, and we do training every year on how to deal with student behavior. I haven't found an operator yet who believes that we need 16 hours of training to make that happen. And so some sort of flexibility within the contract side to acknowledge what our actual training needs are would be appreciated. In addition, just not knowing exactly who we're identifying as needing the training. So if I'm a bus mechanic, I'm working the shop, I'm servicing the contract, but I'm not engaging with students at all, do we need to have those types of people go through mandatory training for services that they're not going to be providing? And then lastly, the provisions on 112 through 113 on the amendment. We appreciate the acknowledgement about the impact that contractors have on snow days. Right now, we receive revenue from the districts and the majority of our contracts for days in which services are provided. And so at 5 o'clock in the morning, when our operators are told that it's a snow day, that we're not driving, we have to inform our drivers that they're not working that day. At the same time, in the majority of cases, we're not getting revenue from the school district for those days. So if we are choosing to pay our drivers for those days, that's coming out of the operator's pocket, not out of the school district's pocket. So we appreciate that there's some clarification around here, that there is some level of expectation that districts need to provide the resources for those drivers to be paid on those snow days. So thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Ryan. With that, members, I think we'll move to the table for any questions or comments. Representative Altendorf.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, Representative Tapke. I have a lot of questions, and some of them is when you were drafting this bill, there is no fiscal note, you know, attached with this. were you aware of what some of the people were being paid for these positions, like paraprofessionals, and then in the lunch capacity?
Representative Tapke.
Madam Chair, Representative Altendorf, yes.
Representative Altendorf, follow up.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I talked to several superintendents, and I have talked to principals and superintendents regarding your bill. And there is a drastic difference, perhaps, in the metro from the rural. I'm not sure of why there's such a disconnect here. In my district, many people are being paid $15 an hour. And to raise that to $25 an hour, a small school, and I'm talking a very, very small school, your bill would cost one school $700,000 in increased employment for their salary, $300,000 for their insurance. And if this was pushed through as a mandate, as you're proposing, we are in a year where we have a surplus, and this would be a very, very scary situation for schools to be able to fund this in the future. I just heard four people testify against your bill, and I hope everyone on this committee is listening to the testifiers, because having that many people testify against a bill truly speaks volumes and should be giving us all at least enough hesitation to reevaluate this bill as it's written. This would be devastating to the rural districts, and correlation is not causation. So when I heard one of the testifiers say, you know, that people are you know, not all paid the same, or they're paid at part-time, well, there are schools that people actually prefer that. There are parents that prefer to work part-time while their children are at school. And so you are pushing a mandate on a school district that I don't think is, it would have a lot of unintended consequences. And if the governor proposed, you know, the 4% and the 2% general fund increases, when I am talking to people in my district who continually say, and I'm talking about teachers and principals and superintendents, and they say one of their biggest problems is us pushing mandates on our school districts, and then they're not funded. This would be a crisis to push a mandate on these school districts, and then in 2 years we're going to hear these school districts are not able to fund these. I really hope every person that signed your name onto this bill takes your name off of this bill. This is not a good bill.
Representative Tapke.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Altendorf. I obviously couldn't disagree with you more. All throughout the summer, talking to folks, I ran into dozens and dozens of paras, janitors, bus drivers, lunch workers that are struggling and are really struggling. And as a state, I believe we should be valuing that work. Like, these are really good jobs that are available in our schools. And so some things that the four folks that testified against the bill, there was a significant amount of I don't know exactly what word to use on it, but it's just not accurate. So the bill will, what will happen is, and there are things that we all obviously need to work about. So as we're going through this bill and it gets laid over, I will still be continuing to be open and available to anybody to talk through things and figure out where we go with some things that are concerning. But this bill is, the way it is set forward today, will be 100%, it's not an unfunded mandate, it will be paid for above and beyond the formula. So this is not going to result in any teachers getting cut, any childcare workers getting cut, anyone that direction getting cut, because this is, it will be funded as it goes forward. There'll be changes that have to come with it, obviously. But what you're saying is wrong, along the fact that I very much value these workers in our schools, and they're huge parts of our communities, and the money will be rolling to the school districts as part of this funding, as you see the formula that's in there today. So thank you for your concerns and your questions about it, and happy to talk further as we go forward.
Representative Hedella.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just want to start by giving a shout out to our food service worker from Hastings that took the time to come up and testify today. Really, really tough spot in Hastings right now. We need to give those guys a bump, and I've been in regular communication with Superintendent McDowell, and I'm looking forward to a meeting coming up in my office with the union. Hopefully we can get to an agreement soon, because nobody's winning in my hometown right now on that. So thanks for taking the time to come up and testify. That said, this bill is not the answer, and I'm not going to speak to the cost, because we don't have the fiscal note. I'm going to talk to just a couple of high-level things for it. It's very concerning to me if we as a legislature, through a bill like this, are going to take away collective bargaining. This bill essentially says the unions can go to the majority for something that they're not able to get through collective bargaining and legislate it. It's killing that process, and eventually I think that comes around and it ends up being bad for the majority at some point as well, if we're killing that collective bargaining process. The other thing that really bugs me too, I'm working closely with long-term care and some crisis that we have there, is the state just gonna start setting new minimum wage for different career fields? I know a lot of CNAs, a lot of nursing staff, there's other professions out there, law enforcement, all kinds of things that could probably come here and put a pretty good argument on the table to say, hey, we deserve a bump, our healthcare isn't right. And I don't know, unless the majority is gonna put together a rainbow omnibus, we're resetting minimum wage for every career field. I just think this is a really, really dangerous slope to go on, and I would urge a no vote on this.
Thank you, Representative Tapke. Quick follow-up, and then I've got a few people on the list.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Representative Padilla, I very much understand where you're coming from, and I think we all need to recognize that this bill is a result of scarcity in funding our education system. Our education system has not been funded adequately for decades. And so we need this, where that's this is coming from is a result of scarcity. It has pushed our school districts. It's not the district's fault. Everybody's scrambling for every single dollar that they can get in order to pay their people and do good work to take care of our kids. This is coming forward because of scarcity in our education. We need to make sure that we are fixing that as we go forward now in Minnesota.
Thank you, Representative Tapke. Representative Greenman.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Tapke. And I don't know, Representative Hedella, if you're talking about wanting to work on a new minimum wage bill, but I am interested in that. And so I do think our current minimum wage is not keeping up with any workers in any industry. And so I know that that's not the issue you're raising, but I just heard that. This is a really important bill. Thank you, Representative Tapke, for bringing it, for working on it. Thank you for the folks in this room. I see many that I know and probably many that I don't. We have heard in this committee and in workforce and the importance of these workers, of these educators, of these food service workers and caring adults. And this is a bill that actually honors that. You know, I'm working on the unemployment insurance piece, but this is a holistic bill that I think fits right alongside that. This morning I had ESPs from schools in my district, from Justice Page Elementary School, from Washburn High School, talking about how much they loved their students, how they love their jobs, and also asking us, really pleading with us to be able to provide them with what they need to continue doing that job, which is both the wages that are competitive, but they talked a lot about the staffing shortage and retention crisis with our colleagues. The unfilled positions, the turnover, low wages, unaffordable health care, insufficient time to do the training and the work that they need to do makes it really hard for folks to continue doing this work. And we heard the same stories when the Hastings, a lot of the Hastings workers were up here a couple of weeks ago, just to tell their stories. I've heard it from Bloomington. I've heard it from across the state as I've been doing other work. This is negatively impacting our kids. What I heard about was students who needed stability. We know that we have a mental health crisis. We need staff who are building relationships, and we have a turnover because folks can't keep jobs. They don't have the stability. They're going other places, and so it's hard when I think we hear testifiers who sort of make this implication that we can't afford this because it's taking money out of the classroom. These workers are the classroom. These workers are the ones who are providing frontline work, whether it's direct care to a one-on-one with folks with disabilities, whether it's providing a fresh meal or a pathway to work, to school. So I just think this is an investment in the classroom, in the things that we know directly impacts kids' education, as well as being just the right thing to do for these workers. So I really appreciate it. I appreciate the folks who have told their stories. And I think this actually has to be an investment that I think that the majority, and I hope we all will make, in ensuring that our kids get what they need and our schools have the support they need. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Greenman. Members, I just want to give a note, too. We have got less than 10 minutes left for this bill because we still have one more on the agenda. But Representative Anderson.
I'll be very quick. I just want to echo Representative Padilla's comments. This bill, not only does it undermine, collective bargaining, which I'm really surprised to see, I guess, from your side of the aisle, but it also does nothing, I think, about dealing with the labor force. We have a shortage in every industry. I would say the worst one is in long-term care. But we have a lot less people working, whether it's the demographics or just choosing not to work as much, and it's affecting every single industry. Trying to prop up, certain things through dictating and mandating higher wages within one thing and not within another is just going to distort the market even more, and that's what I see here. It's also if there's a belief that we're underfunding education, then we should be looking at the formula and allowing the administrators and the school boards to make decisions about where they need to put dollars to deal with any issues in any particular job category that they have, rather than attempting to dictate wages from the state, literally from the state. It's incredible. On certain job categories. So thank you.
Thank you. And I have to apologize because of time. We didn't get to go through the whole slideshow, but I'd suggest folks look at that. In Minnesota, we actually have 5% more than the United States average on folks in the workplace. Mm-hmm. But education is where we're struggling. It's less that we're under the performance in the U.S. So I don't know if it's that much about people not wanting to be in here. I think in this case, it's probably about the pay. With that, I've got Hill, Clardy, and then Kresha, and then we're wrapping. So, Representative Hill.
Thank you, Chair Youakim, and really appreciate it, Representative Tapke, for bringing this bill. Due to the scarcity of time, I'll be very, very brief, but just want to echo what Representative Greenman said a few moments ago, that we have incredible servants who have come here today to speak to us. And these are our colleagues who serve as paraprofessionals. It certainly includes our cafeteria staff. It includes our bus drivers. It includes our administrative colleagues as well and the concerns that they bring. The question comes down to how can we afford to do the right thing here? And I think what I wanted to echo and highlight from Representative Greenman's comments is how can we afford to not take care of the folks who are on the front line serving our kids. As the son of a paraprofessional who was held 1/10 of an hour below the threshold to get insurance covered by her employer, I recognize what happens when we operate in a scarcity model. And unfortunately, it seems that repeatedly certain groups, certain employee groups, certain individuals tend to be the ones who hold the bag when we don't do right by supporting and strategically investing in our kids through our schools. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Hill. Representative Clardy.
This will be really brief, but I'm speaking my truth. And to me, this is deeply rooted in some of the systemic issues that Minnesota has been trying to resolve, because a lot of the populations that would be included in these groups as far as employment would be highly affected, and that's a lot of the BIPOC community. So I just needed to speak my truth, and I'm just putting it out there. Thank you.
Thank you, Representative Clardy. And last up, Minority Lead Kreisha.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative Kafke, for bringing this forward. I'll just broad comments are as I think about this. I mean, I understand many of the things that have brought this bill forward, and I think that it doesn't matter who's in power. People try to sway things one way or the other based on stories and things that are happening. I just would caution us as a legislature and as a committee that, you know, I just was reading an article today. Paul Krugman is saying, I have no idea where this economy is going. This is why. We are trying to control things that we probably aren't going to be best at controlling at in this committee, and we're creating levels of uncertainty that nobody has any ideas. We heard a bill earlier today where three school districts are saying our costs went through the roof because of inflation and all this. This is the reason. I'm not saying what's happening in Hastings or other states. They need to resolve these. They absolutely need to resolve these. But if we continue to add layers of uncertainty, I mean, the thing that scares me the most is I don't know where this can land. I look at where we have targets and we have things to come. We have impossible situations for a very difficult job for our chair here. And if this doesn't land where either one of these sides in the strike want, then they're going to have to come back to the table. And they're going to have to come back to the table with tools they may not have. And so every time we wade into these waters and we overshadow local control situations, we put one side with larger amounts of hope than the other side has tools. Those uncertainties are equating to higher costs. They are the reason the Fed has no idea what level to get to for interest rates. These are the reasons that we are creating for people's pensions and not knowing where retirement's coming and all this. And I caution us to take a step back from that. There are things that we can control. There are things that we can't control in a finance budget. And there are things we can help schools with. But at the end of the day, people are going to have to resolve things that are related to them locally. And so I just would caution us. Thank you, Representative Tabke, for doing this and other bills that we're seeing. But I would caution us from trying to become the state school board, because we will fail at that. And that would be my caution. So good luck with your bill.
Thank you, Representative Kreisha. Representative Tabke, final word.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. I appreciate you hearing this bill and helping to move to something that will help families in Minnesota. This is a massive, massive issue throughout the state, where it used to be that we had lots and lots of folks working in our, lots of parents working in our school district to fill those needs. That just doesn't happen anymore because we have jobs that don't pay enough to keep folks. And so it's a great, great job for parents, for working parents, for our BIPOC community, for everyone who can take and drop kids off at school. They can work through the day. They can pick up kids at the end of the day. And this is a child care issue. This is an equity issue. And so I just look forward to continue to work on this. So I want to reiterate that anybody who has issues and wants to continue working on this as it goes forward, before it gets hopefully put in the finance bill at the end of the day, that I am absolutely willing and wanting to continue. So thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Tabke. With that, I'll move that House File 1348 as amended. Well, I will lay over 1348 as amended for possible inclusion in an education finance bill. Next and final up, we have Representative Kozlowski with House File 336. As folks get settled, Representative Pryor, would you like to move House File 336 before the committee with the intention of laying over this bill for possible inclusion in ed finance?
So moved, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Pryor. And as people leave the room, can we keep it quiet so we can finish our business here today? Representative Kozlowski, House File 336 is before the committee. Please proceed.
Thank you, Chair Joachim, and committee members. We really appreciate the opportunity to be here and present House File 336 on behalf of the Duluth Public Schools. Back in 2016, the new special education funding formulas negatively impacted Duluth public schools as they were unexpectedly billed through special education tuition that more than doubled, costing the district over $5 million and draining their financial reserves. So the bill in front of you today is truly a step forward to try and right a wrong that was actually created by the state in an attempt to make the district whole and replenish their reserves. So with me today is Duluth School Superintendent John Magus, who will testify in support of this bill.
Thank you so much. Superintendent Magus, please state your name for the record and proceed.
Thank you. Chair Youakim and members of the House Education Finance Committee, thank you for the opportunity to present today. And my name is John Magus, and I'm Superintendent of Duluth Public Schools. Thank you for hearing House File 336, and we especially thank Representatives Kozlowski and Olson for authoring the bill. For many of you, the faces of Duluth and the issues of our special education funding issue are not new. We've been coming year after year, and we've actually had this included in several omnibus bills in the past, and it was right at the finish line when it wasn't continued along with other funding. But basically, there has been a funding anomaly that happened in 2026. When the new formulas went in place, there was an anomaly billing, so we were basically double billed by the charter schools that year. So that created for us a funding ceiling and a funding floor that were much lower than other districts. And it did affect several other districts as well, but most districts were affected for maybe approximately 75,000 at most for the other districts that were impacted. But because of that funding anomaly, we were unable to receive over $5 million in funding over the course of that 4 years. So the tuition rates were double that year, and that's the cause of that funding. So with that $5 million coming out of our coffers, when I started as superintendent in 2020, I was hired in March of 2020, which was an exciting time to come on as a new superintendent. We looked at our financial reserves, and the school district fund balance was at about $400,000. $400,000 where a district of our size would normally have a fund balance of about $10 million. And you might think, well, what happened? What were some of the impacts on kids because of that funding anomaly? And we have very archaic textbooks. We didn't have laptops going into the pandemic, and we also had other things that factored in. Just as a for instance, our social studies textbooks when I started ended with Bill Clinton for the American history textbook. So there's a huge need for us to have those funds replenishing our coffers so that we're able to put in place some of the things that other districts have been able to put in place. We are very grateful to hear this as well, though. So really, we're not asking for $5 million. We're not asking for the full $5 million. We're just asking for the $2 million that's been in the omnibus bill several years in a row. And because of the loss, this will help right a past wrong that was in place. So basically, if we put this in place, this is going to have a very positive impact on our students. We'll be able to continue replacement of some of the laptops and things that were bought with our ESSER funding, and it will be able to help replenish the fund balance as well. So those are things that we're looking forward to making a right out of that wrong. And again, also thinking about the special education cross subsidy that is somewhat linked, we do have about $43 million that we have paid in cross subsidy over the course of that same time period that we lost the $5 million. So even if we fund cross subsidy at 50%, that would be about $11 million additional dollars for our district. That would be if it was 100%. It would be about $6 million if it was at 50%. So we are very much looking forward to the work that is being done by the legislature at this time, and we appreciate that. I would also say that I'm coming to you not just on behalf of myself as administrator for Duluth Public Schools. I've also been a teacher. I started my career 30 years ago as a special education paraprofessional. And I am also the father of a son who had special needs as well. So when I think about what do I want for each child in Duluth, I think about what would I want for my children. And I'm hopeful that the legislature will see the ability to make a right out of a previous wrong. Thank you.
Thank you, Superintendent Magus. And I forgot to welcome you, Representative Kowalski, to the Education Finance Committee.
Feel very welcome.
With that, I just, quick question. I just heard in your testimony, I just wanted to clarify. You said in 2016 you were double billed by the charter schools. Could you explain that a little bit more for me?
Sure. So there was, it's relatively complex, but basically the funding formula was set at that point, and it set a ceiling and floor based on the funding. And that year we ended up having about twice the normal billing, and they're in the handout I provided. It shows that the years prior to that billing, the funding in general, the billings were generally around 75 to 150,000. A couple years it was 200,000, but that year in 2016, it was $1.3 million. So that 1 year that it was based upon was basically a huge anomaly and created the outlier funding formula for us. So that has been corrected. Our previous work with the bill, we're seeking an adjustment in the funding formula. That has been done, but still the $5 million that we lost out on over those years is something that is something that we're hoping to have corrected.
Thank you so much, Superintendent.
Thank you.
With that, members, I'll go to the table for questions or comments.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just is it Magus, Superintendent?
Yes.
Magus? So thank you for your bill. Good luck with this. I understand trying to work through. Just a comment. I was thinking this through, and your social studies textbooks may be right, because I'll just use my family. There's sides of my family that don't acknowledge the 8 years after Clinton, and there's other sides of my family that don't acknowledge the 8 years after Bush. So maybe your social studies textbook has it right.
True.
Thank you, Representative Khrushchev. Members, any other comments or thoughts? Seeing none, Representative Kowalski, final comments.
All right. Well, just want to say thank you again. We really appreciate and encourage your support in helping to replenish our reserves and make sure that our students and our educators and our family and our community are set on even footing going forward. So thank you.
Thank you, Representative Kowalski. With that, I will lay over House file 336 for possible inclusion in the education finance bill. Members, thank you for your work today. We will see you again tomorrow for another full committee time. We are adjourned.